You're tuning in to Radio Movies, a special event podcast in collaboration between the Explosion Network, the Pop Culturist, and Radio Watson. We're discussing the latest film in the Kevin Smith Viewerski universe for the first episode of this podcast in about 2.5, nearly 3 years. Crazy. My name's Dylan Blight, and joining me from the Pop Culturist, Ryan Betson.
How are ya?
That was like full.
Yeah, went full Australian for a hot second. A lot's happened in 2.5 years, and apparently I've boganized.
Yeah, I was not expecting that. It's funny because I haven't seen you for 2.5 years, so that's crazy.
It's been crazy.
It's been crazy times. COVID, everything's happened. Fuck, actually, COVID's happened since we recorded. Also here for Radio Watson, Buddy Watson.
Salsa Shark. Dun, dun. Dun, dun.
Did you watch
Cage,
the right movie?
Cage goes in salsa.
Yes, I did. Okay, it's good to be back after this long hiatus and, of course, not seeing any of you for any period of time across then as well.
No, it's a whole pandemic.
I like how, I do like how, though, like, this podcast did pretty well. There was, like, people trying to add us on Facebook or whatever else. I like how that just disappears for, like, I like how I have stuff like this in the back end. It's like, oh, new Kevin Smith movie out, trying to pull that one out of the Radio Movies, out of the cupboard, time to put our new episode up.
Yeah, take it out.
That's my draw.
Dust it off.
Buddy puts a mask on. Alright, today we are talking about Clerks 3, the film a lot of us thought we'd never get. I want to talk a little bit later about how it was going to happen, then wasn't going to happen, of course, in a little bit. But also the fact that it seemingly arrived digitally in Australia a lot quicker than I think any of us thought, because yeah, it just popped up and I sent a screenshot to both of yous and I was like, what the fuck? And the funniest part was I actually had someone else from work messaged it to me the following morning, who was like, hey, I thought you'd want to know. I'm like, yes, I saw that last night. I've already watched it. So
on brand.
Appreciate you considering me. Thank you very much.
And I saw people on Twitter also, like, in the days after that, even today, like, as we're recording this, I've seen a few people on Twitter like, oh shit, I never realized Clerks 3 was out. Like, it just seemingly dropped out of nowhere on digital, but at a weird price as well. Like, I just brought it. I assume, did you just buy it, Ryan, or did you? No, okay. I don't want to know.
I plead the fifth, but I will buy the Blu-ray.
I don't know if there will be a fucking Blu-ray is the problem. Was there a reboot Blu-ray? I don't actually remember.
Yeah, there was.
Okay, wasn't sure.
Yeah. Seeing as most of Kevin Smith's movies have done their most, like, successful when they've reached home video, I can't see them not releasing it.
Yeah, I don't know, because I assume, like, these days it's a lot different to, like, when Mallrats released on DVD. Mm. Like, most people probably either, I assume more people just buy digitally now, which, yeah, it's because $18, I think, was, like, the price point. I was like, that's a weird price point to drop at. But all right. Of course, as per usual, for the sake of this podcast, we'll assume you have watched the movie, so we will be talking of full spoilers and everything. And because we haven't seen any of us for 3 years because of COVID, let's quickly get an update. How are we all doing? Has anyone decided to hate Kevin Smith in the 3 years that since we last talked about this? Ryan?
No, I haven't. My Kevin Smith consumption had decreased in the last couple of years. I don't listen to Smodcast or Get Old or Hollywood Babylon as much anymore. I don't know why. I just sort of shifted. I've not really consumed as much Kevin Smith these in the last 2.5 years, I guess. I have watched Reboot a second time since then, a third time. I have watched it sometime since then. But yeah, no, it's the love's still there. It's just as I have aged, it took a time away.
We still got a bunch of posters sitting in your lounge room.
That's now, true. So. Those posters most still certainly are around my house. That hasn't changed.
Yeah, so not changed. Buddy, I assume you're just the same as well.
Yeah. The same, yeah. That's it. Just following on Twitter and seeing all the hijinks there.
Yeah, that's the same as me. I think even when we recorded the last time, I dropped out of listening to his podcast, basically. And that was for no reason other than the reason I dropped out listening to a lot of podcasts. Time. The more podcasts I do myself, the less I consume, really.
Time is most certainly the answer, because I kind of replaced my Smodcast with wrestling podcasts like a moron. So I only have so much time in my life, and apparently it's just wrestling and PlayStation-related podcasts.
Yeah, that's fair. But you cover your Kevin Smith by talking about him on this podcast. So.
That's true.
So last time we spoke, it was about Jay and Silent Bob Reboot. And at the end of that podcast, we discussed a few things I found interesting. As I opened my Google Doc to do the notes for this show, they literally were dot points in there that I was like, huh, that's funny. Like, considering that whenever I talk to this, one of the dot points was literally, I wonder what a Kevin Smith produced Clerks film would look like in the year 2020. We're about to talk about how that turned out.
Yeah.
And we talked about the continuation of the Viewerskew universe after such a long time, and if we felt like it was a good idea for Kevin to even do a Clerks 3, given our thoughts about... I quickly skimmed through the episode again, mostly to do with the Jay and Silent Bob reboot, like the comedy, and we talked about how Kevin Smith sort of undercut the comedy. And I do want to come back on that and see how we feel about that in this movie in particular. But yeah, here we are. So... Ryan,
yeah,
start with you. Clerks 3. How do you feel? How are you feeling about it?
I really enjoyed it, but like I'm predisposed to enjoy it. Like it's kind of my shit. And then to touch upon what you just mentioned there about the mix of comedy and the serious emotion, I felt that he went exactly where he should have in this. There were some laughs, there were some lighthearted moments, but it really hit that emotional tone. In the way that Reboot didn't, you know, Reboot was too, you know, dick and fart jokey and didn't let the emotion sit, where I felt in this movie, like there were parts that destroyed me, but it let it sit for a long time. Not like overly long, but enough for it to really hit home. There were some parts where it kind of, they throw a barb in there to kind of lower, you know, have the emotional tendency and then bring it up, but then bring it back down again. And that's probably the biggest thing for me is I really enjoyed Quiet Hits. You know, look at this morose motherfucker over here, you know, feeling of the movie. And yeah, it hit beats that I didn't expect it to. And there were performances that were astounding. Yeah, I really rate it. I don't know where it sits in terms of all like in the current ranking. I'll have to sit there and think about it because I can't remember what I gave them last time. But I'll
I wasn't going to ask anyone.
I knew Buddy's prepped because he loves his ranking.
Buddy will have it prepped. But I'm like, those other films we talked about where we've watched them each several times,
yeah,
it's hard to like just slot this one in. Buddy, how are you feeling about Clerks 3 as someone who wasn't the biggest fan of Clerks 2?
First of all, if you have a Letterboxd account, you can keep it all access. I literally just slot it into my top ones then. So I know exactly where it's ranked and how it ranks amongst the others. So that's all good. Just keep prepped like me. Clerks 2 I wasn't the biggest fan of, possibly because of the humor at the time. I can't remember what I said on the
donkey. It's the donkey podcast.
It was the donkey stuff and just some of the other stuff. I felt like maybe that's a me thing. I'd outgrown that humor when I watched Clerks 2. It definitely went, you know, Clerks 2 definitely tried for those moments with, you know, the kind of the stuff at the end, the friendship and everything that kind of maybe Ryan, you kind of hit you more on. But I feel like everything that it was trying to do or semi leaned into that didn't hit for me in Clerks 2 absolutely hit in Clerks 3. Like this movie has just got so much heart and I just did not expect that.
Pun intended.
And then with its kind of with that kind of humor that was still kind of having that similar type of humor. And they're probably the only bits that kind of like jump me out of it because I'm like, oh, here we go. But the overall arc, oh man, it just hit me. And to be we're talking spoilers at the moment, are we?
Oh, yeah, the whole podcast is spoilers.
Yeah, so like the whole idea.
Oh, I was playing it safe, my bad.
The whole meta narrative of like obviously Kevin Smith having a heart attack in real life and then Dante and like Randall having his heart attack and then kind of having that kind of mirror put up to himself and having that like that question of morality and what have I done and how long do I have and you know life is kind of precious and then you know chase your dreams and it so happens to be that it reenacts Kevin Smith's dream of making his first movie which is Clerks and then the whole meta thing of shooting the same scenes and coming up with those references from Clerks 1 and 2 I thought it was just going to be like you know This is a real meta thing, but it hit on so many more levels with the kind of Rosario Dawson character who passed away and having the flashbacks there. That like her character in this were just the best moments, and then obviously to like kind of bookend it with Dante having the heart attack and him not you know, kind of not surviving it and then having that as the thing, man, it's just, it was, it was full on. I was definitely watching this and questioning my own self-worth and my own kind of what have I done or at what point am I in my life and should I have accomplished more or what do I want to achieve and life is precious and all these kind of things. And that's kind of the biggest compliment I can get. It kind of, yeah, just hit me in the feels.
I'm going to swing it back to you if you didn't realize it's spoilers were offline.
Yeah, I thought we were going to like dive into the stuff a bit more specifically. But yes, but yeah, I guess for me, it's those sort of moments. Like there were some really nice touches, especially in the, you know, in it referenced it in the movie. And of course, it's the one of the big things we know about Clerks 1 is that they were going to kill Dante at the end of the third act. And they did that here. They killed him in the third movie. You know, they just kind of nicely redid the original version of it, except unlike the first time where it had no emotional depth or punch, now it did. So he still was able to deliver that original pitch he had, original idea, I guess he had for Clerks 1, but then able to nail it here. This movie is 100% self-congratulatory and very like, look at the shit I've done. But I think that's okay in that, this is made for Kevin, clearly. He's always made the movies for himself. And he's made the movie for everyone that's joined the journey. So in the credits, he does this nice sort of reading of like what the final like monologue would have been. And I love that because it's kind of like, hey, anyone that's ever walked through that door at the Quick Stop, whether that be in the movie, whether it be in the real world, for those who've gone and made the pilgrimage to the Quick Stop in New Jersey. And it's just sort of this nice little love letter to what got him to where he is now. And I see this as being the end of the Clerks movies, especially Viewersk universe, possibly. Like I know there's like the idea of like Twilight of the Morats, and there was always, I think Moose Jaw's going to be loosely connected as well, but whether they ever happen or not, who knows. As a big angst person, who that's the genre of that I love the most, yeah, having this movie
a big angst. What's that? What's that genre?
No, I just love angst. Like any music, any movies, any sort of media that's got like angst and sadness and despair, that's my shit. Right. So
I've never heard someone describe that as a genre. I was like, no, angst.
Yeah. It's like every music, all the music I listened to growing up, just angst, angsty white boy teen shit, you know? Yeah. So for me, having this have that emotional punch and then having that sort of juxtaposition of Randall having a heart attack and coming out good and then Dante having one and having it come out bad, it kind of nicely heightens the impact of Randall and how lucky he was to come out of the way he had. I'm still unsure how I feel about the Becky stuff, so Rosario Dawson's character, in that I appreciate why they did it from the story, but I wanted Dante to have that kid. I wanted them to have at least a moment. Because that, to me, even in Clerks 2, the relationship between Becky and Dante felt earned and it felt right. And to have that pulled away, I think, was quite intense, but it also amplified the character and allowed Brian O'Halloran to give what I would believe his greatest performance. Because even if you go watch Clerks 1, you watch Clerks 2, you watch his appearances and other things, he does have this sort of kind of stilted delivery, and that was very much present in like, you know, Slacker and as well as Clerks and so those, some of those early 90s independent movies. But here I feel his delivery was bang on. His emotional impact was absolutely fantastic. And as Buddy highlighted, Rosario Dawson just delivered, and her charm and charisma and just coming in as Becky just was really just punchy. And I can't think of another way to explain it. It just kind of, I don't know, there was just some things in there that hit really hard, especially when at the first scene when they're at the gravesite, and there's a line for the life of me that I can't think of, probably because of my trauma response in my brain. I just shut it out. But like, it's one of those ones that came out and my brain just went and just my eyes just erupted. It's nothing I could do about it. The only thing that I think was really missing and wasn't handled well was Elias. But I've spoken for quite a bit. Dylan, I think it's your turn, and we'll come back.
That's all right. We will whip through all the characters again. I really liked it. I was honestly surprised at how much I liked it, because I thought Jay and Silent Bob Reboot was fine, as we like talked about. I thought it was a fun enough movie. It had some like slight moments where it got into, like, it would pick at sort of meaningful stuff and then just completely shit on it, and we talked about that, or like fail to live up to the potential that movie sort of had. But it was fine, sort of forgettable. But this, I feel like, is much more back on track to what I would like. This is a good Kevin Smith movie to me. I felt like there was like, I think maybe it was like 10, 15 minutes in. I can't remember what the first joke was, but it was a joke where I did laugh out loud. I was like, all right, you're funny fucker. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, all right, I'm bored. And it's funny because I went on an emotion where I was like, I'm watching it and I'm like, yeah, okay, it's just another Clerks movie, but I'm fine with that. Like, I'm down for just like another Clerks movie, you know, like hang out with the boys at the Quick Stop, whatever. Like, I'm down for 90 minutes of that. And then, yeah, as the movie progresses and it just sort of progressively gets more serious, I guess, as time goes along, I feel like it does achieve the notion of the original story of Clerks and the whole idea behind Kevin wanting to kill him in the first place, which was like his explanation for wanting to kill Dante in the first place was to be like, look how fucked up life could be, man. Like, you could just die in a second, and like, you know, like, you're at work your whole life in a shitty job you hate, like, get out there and do, you know what I mean? But people were like, it just sort of comes out of nowhere. And although you understand what the message is, I don't think the audience would have. And I don't think the audience would have got that. That's the message. Like, I wouldn't have got it unless I've heard him explain it on the podcast. But I feel like him doing it this way, you really do get the proper message about, like, you know, like, you should, if you want to do something, like, just get out there and, you know, do it. Like, I feel like that's the moral of the movie. Don't sit around waiting for life to come to you. And also, maybe don't spend your whole life being a fucking asshole. You know, Randall.
Well, they do that two ways, right? They have Randall have the heart attack at the start, and it's like, life's too short, I need to go chase something. He chases something, and then you have Dante go, he has the heart attack, and it's like, well, he didn't get that because he didn't survive. So you kind of, it works because they have the two flip of the coins, like, damn, I had my turning point, now I'm going to change my life, which I guess Kevin Smith did in real life as well. Now he's gone, you know, kind of a super fit freak and lost all this weight. He's super healthy and kind of just doing whatever he wants to do.
But they also touch upon. Sorry, go ahead.
And then, like I said before, and then Dante at the end, he doesn't get that.
No. Yeah, but they also show the when you are faced with your own mortality and you become quite insular and quite selfish, because, you know, like, I only have so much time. I need to do what I need to do, and then they show that stress. And I guarantee you that is a genuine reflection of the life that Kevin had lived post his heart attack. Like, knowing the how much personal stuff he throws into these movies, whether even down to allegedly the if you've ever heard his stories about dealing with the doctor, etc., apparently it's exactly how it went down. Like, because the stories he tells on stand up or in podcasts mirrored exactly the scene, even down to like the you know, the dick joke stuff about not taking off his pants and the Widowmaker and all these little different things. I believe the doctor is actually named after the real life doctor that saved him. So the idea that he would then hit that beat where, hey, you have been incredibly selfish and you are focusing it all on you. And he even made jokes about Reboot, how he's like, hey, I had a heart attack. So I used that to all my friends to come do this movie for me. you know, so it's very interesting how they handled it that way.
The funny thing about the doctor is that she's played by Amy Sedaris, and they spend the entire time talking about Star Wars, in particular The Mandalorian, in which she actually plays a recurring character in The Mandalorian, and she's Randall's explaining it like she has no idea. I'm like, this is such a funny joke to people who realize, like, that jokes no,
very
in the Mandalorian,
small,
like,
a very small niche
group, and I'm sitting there like, you're in the show, lady. Like, good bit for, yeah, small niche audience, but that's fine. All right, so let's run down, and yeah, let's
dive in. Yeah, did you get all your beats in, Dil? Because we just kept talking.
No, yeah, I think I did. I don't think there's any. The only thing I don't like and don't love, and I think it's just, this is like me bringing in something that happened in real life and tying it into this movie, and then spending the entire movie going, is he joking about this or is he agreeing with it? I don't understand. Like, I think he's both, which is anything to do with NFTs. Because Kevin Smith sold the rights to, or sold his last movie. Fuck, what's it called?
The
fucking serial killer.
Kilroy was here.
Kilroy was here. He sold it as an NFT, right? So he sold that film. It's out there. It's NFT. There's 5,000 of it made, which I remember seeing that and going, oh, Kevin, oh, not the NFTs, Kevin. Like, don't do that. Like, you're supposed to be a good guy, Kevin, you know, like, and then I'm watching this movie and they're doing all these NFT bits. And I'm like, he's making fun of NFTs, I think, but also he sold NFTs. So I'm like, is he making fun of them while also, like, and I'm sitting, so it was, it's anything to do with NFTs simply because I have this, like, because I know he's done it in real life. I was just very confused if he's like parodying it, or but it, I was, yeah, that was the NFTs were confusing me. That was like, yeah,
but it also ages the movie really quick. Like most of, like, if you look at
Clerks, yeah, you're gonna watch this in 5 years, and people are gonna be like,
yeah, that's what? The only downside. If, even if you look at like Clerks 2, there's not a lot of like time referential jokes, so it still lands. Like Clerks 1 is, you can tell it's made in a particular time, but. It's not like, oh man, how good was like the, you know, the 94 Chicago Bulls. There's no like direct references or anything, you know what I mean?
People could have said when they watched original Clerks and could have been like, man, these jokes aren't going to hold up in 10 years. No one's going to care about Star Wars. But, or Jaws, no one's going to care. You know what I mean? Like all, it's just all the pop culture jokes that he made in, as Buddy looks through his fucking poster. All the jokes that were in the original Clerks were all pop culture references. It just so happens to be they were all things that became some of the biggest, most talked about movies ever and have continued to be such a thing. So I don't think NFTs are going to hold the same caliber as Jaws jokes and Star Wars jokes. So I did want to run down the characters a bit more and get any, if you want to go a bit more deep on them and stuff like that. So Dante in this movie, the setup is pretty dark from the outset, which is the thing. Like the movie starts, you're like, yeah, fun, good time. And then I don't know how long it takes before you see and you get the information that, oh, hey, Becky's dead. Mm. And also she died with their unborn child, Grace.
They were name of Kevin Smith's mum, by the way, just a little touch.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know, why are you doing that to yourself, Kevin? And they were hit by, they were killed when they were hit by a drunk driver, to which I'm like, drunk driver. I was like, and I'm Googling after. I'm like, no Kevin Smith, drunk driver. I'm like trying to work out if there was any, like, I mean, drunk driver is just, you know, bad in general, but I was trying to find out if there was any, if anything in his family had ever happened to him or, you know, like anything like that. I couldn't find anything, but yeah, I mean, it's like it's a very dark way, I feel, to start Dante's character in this movie, considering, as you were saying before, right, at the end of Clerks 2, you're like, you know, he gets rid of, fuck, I can't remember her name, but
Becky,
is it? Yeah. Gets rid of Becky. He gets with, no, not Becky. He gets with Becky. He gets rid of Jennifer Schwalbach's character.
Emma.
Emma. Gets rid of Emma, who's, shout out, she's in this movie, of course, as well. But gets rid of her. They find out they're having a kid together. Clerks 2 is like, yay, happy times. And this movie's like, yeah, she dead. The unborn baby dead. I was like, man, this is fucked up. What, buddy, how'd you, do you think it was like a very dark direction to take Dante's sort of character to have him like dealing with this trauma and literally seeing and talking to Becky? Like it's fucked up, really.
Fucked up, yes, but it grounds the movie and it actually like gives some weight to his character and gives him the moment later on where he's actually able to deliver his, like you said, his best performance and that monologue where he actually has the heart attack. Whereas if it was just kind of Clerks 1 and Clerks 2 and kind of having the old back and forth and the pop culture references, you know, one after the other, then you've got nothing to kind of, you've got no weight to it. So I didn't think it was like super crazy. They don't give you all that information at one hit. Like obviously they have the cemetery scene and then a little bit later on he kind of has the revelation that's the drunk driver and everything. So they kind of do like, you know, drip it out a little bit. So it's not all one hit of just like exposition dump, you're dead because of this. So I felt like the way they did, he did that, that was quite good and that really worked. And maybe it wouldn't have worked if it was like, bang, this is right in your face, but it felt like they came up more organically and actually, like I said, gave more weight to him. And then obviously that helps with his relationship with Dante and with Randall, instead of just, oh, we're fighting because you're selfish again. Like he actually has his own kind of, they do that, but he has his own kind of, I guess, reasons or he's in his own kind of beliefs have changed and how he sees the world has changed. And it's not just you're selfish and I'm the responsible one, you know, fight, kiss, make up. He has something else. Like, this is real. He's lost everything and it's kind of, it means more now.
Same thoughts for you, Ryan?
Yeah, very much so. I think it added a nice maturity to Dante in that, you know, they can't be slackers forever. And to have, I don't think that maturity comes through adversity. Like, you can have it without it. And like, it's very cliche to have that happen. But I think we needed such a dichotomy, just like a huge jump forward. And I think this needed to happen to have those beats. And yeah, as I said before, and then Buddy's backed me up as well, is yeah, this is Brian O'Halloran's best performance ever. He hits it in so many good ways. A little detail that you may not have noticed. So Becky, Rosario Dawson's character, was born 1979, died in 2006. 1979 was the song by the Smashing Pumpkins that plays in Clerks 2 when Dante makes the decision to drive back and get with her. So I love that little detail. That just made my heart fucking swell because I love that song in general. So that's the scene where he does the drive around town and he stops and he sees a very young Harley Quinn Smith in the window of that restaurant and has that moment. Little detail there that's quite nice. I do quite like the idea that Randall is the main character in this movie and that Dante was kind of the secondary, but then also back ending with a, hey, I see you as the main character in my story, but, you know, it's like all these different things. I don't think there's much more I can say without repeating what Buddy said. I thought it was Brent. As Dante, I think it was fantastic.
Yeah, it's I think it's like it's a very brave choice to take your like sort of the OG character from the Viewers' Guild universe, you know, the Luke or whatever, Dante, and give him such a, just literally from the last time we saw him where he has such a happy story, and then next movie to give him all this trauma and stuff that he's dealing with. It's,
I was certainly not emotionally ready to have him go. When he had that heart attack, I thought he died down there on the floor in the quick stop. I was like, no. And then once again, hard tears. And then he survived. I'm like, oh no, this is going to be some bullshit hope, isn't it? Oh no, oh no, oh no. And like, I appreciate them having him sort of wake up while beyond that life support. He sort of, incubated and stuff. So they did get to have that moment rather than having him just be completely out for the rest of the film. It's good.
And it's a really meta moment of him waking up and then Randall coming in there and then showing him the movie. It's like it's literally his moment of my life flashing, but beyond,
yes,
you know, in front of my eyes before I pass, except it's him like rewatching the movie.
Yeah. So. Saying that when before he goes, I watched my life flash before my eyes and I fucking hated it. Where here is like, no, just before you go, you now get to watch your life before your eyes and you realize it's fucking awesome. And you did so many good things and you meant so much to these people. You didn't, like, you didn't die doing nothing.
Interesting choice to instead of use just like recreated shots to make it look like the movie he had actually been shooting, they just used the real clips.
I love that. It added so much more extra to it, I think.
Yeah. Because they could have very easily just done reshots so you knew it was the fake movie.
They opened the movie with a shot for shot of the original film. So you think, would they just do that again? But no, I kind of, yeah. It's just,
it was great because it makes you think back to maybe when you watched the movie
correct.
The first time. It's like it takes you on that ride.
Yep. When I saw Close Clerks 2 scenes, my heart died, in like pun intended, because that movie means so much to me. And then having to have all that emotional heat from the movie and then to see Clerks 1 again and then to see Clerks 2 again. And I was like, oh, yeah.
And then, yeah, the part that just hurt my heart the most was the line at the funeral, where it's such a corny line really, but it works so well. Yeah. And I can't believe how well it works, which is the, you know, where Randall goes to say, like, I had a big thing. I was going to say, you know, some quote from, I had Kirk's speech about Spock, but I'm more of a Star Wars guy, but really all I could think to say was quote from you. You're not even supposed to be here today, or however exactly you worded it. Yeah,
like, it's that self-referential so enough well. to they've repurposed the impact of that quote, and it made it from something really dour in like a cynical way to a more emotional impact.
it's kind of changed the way I'm going to think about that line now, because I used to say it all the time, and I still say it all the time. Like, I think I said it at work, like literally 2 weeks ago, randomly when I was there at work on a day I was supposed to have off. I'm like, oh, you know, something goes wrong. I'm like, I'm not even supposed to be here today. What, you know, like one person out of all the people at my work, get, a couple people get the fucking reference. But you know, I just whip it out without even thinking that line. So now I'm wondering, like, is this going to change my context of this fucking line? Am I just now going to think of it as more of a sad sort of thing? Like, have I had my, you know, 30 years of this line not being sad now? It's changed forever.
Power of intent, power of tone. Yeah. Words are awesome.
True. I was going to give a quick shout out to Veronica as well. Who we get?
Yeah, Gigliotti.
Who I'm very happy to see. I love seeing people come back from sort of the very early Bielski movies, the proper actors and everything like that, and you get these little updates and. The characters, just even though it's a very short appearance for Veronica, this character felt very lived in this very short time we see. And I just like how she comes in yelling and about the movie at first, totally on character, on brand from what you know of her from the original film. And then straight away, they're just like, yeah, she still has feelings for Dano. They're just out in the car. So, so I appreciated her coming back for a short performance in this movie. Let's do Jay and Silent Bob. So Jay and Silent Bob in this movie, we find out, have a now legal dispensary, which is now taken over from the what used to be the video store right next to the Quick Stop. And they struggle very much with the fact that it is now legal for them to sell their marijuana and is indeed something they don't need to be doing out front of their store, which I found very, very funny and quite meta in the difference of time between these, you know, these movies and how stuff's actually got legal. I thought it was quite funny. Very chill, Jay and Silent Bob, I feel, in this movie too. No, like, really outrageous Jay and Silent Bob stuff for the most part. They felt like very, like, they were there, but they weren't, they had no major hijinks or, you know, crazy stuff. Like, in fact, the biggest part that I found quite funny, and again, meta, because a lot of this movie is meta, is simply the part where they're trying to film the Jay dancing scene, and they go, and that's a true story. So, yeah, it's like, and I love when Kevin Smith told that story the first time I heard it on a podcast or whatever. He's like, oh, hi, this kid, you know, Jay, he's always doing crazy shit, dancing around or whatever. And we try and get him to dance on set, and he like had to tell everyone to go inside the store or whatever else. And that's literally what happened. So,
and like, you know, why have you saying snoochie boochies on like every page? Yeah. I wouldn't say that. It's like, you said that 2 seconds ago.
So good. Yeah,
so funny. It must have been like quite interesting for him, those two as well, to sort of, you got to wonder sometimes how, I guess for your own sort of mental health sometimes, like making a film with like this is what it must be like to, you know, like recreate some of your like best memories from something like a major milestone of your life, you know, like literally a life-changing moment. Like the creating Clerks was life-changing for all these people involved. So you got to imagine what it's like to like recreate these very meta scenes that are jokes that he's been telling on podcasts for years. There's no behind the scenes of Clerks where this footage exists. It's just,
well, that's kind of what he touches upon in that little epilogue in the credits. He talks about how, you know, how for everyone, they remember Clerks black and white, but I remember it in vivid color. This is it. What you're seeing in this Clerks 3 is how I remember Clerks 1. So he got to literally remake his memory and retell that story, but in the way that he saw it. So it is a lot more personable in that space. And, you know, I agree with you, Dylan. I think it was having Jay and Silent Bob be a bit more grounded. Like, they did still do some of their dumb shit, like arguing that Dante's only ever been called Sergio. Like it reads like they're just fucking with Dante rather than them being actual idiots. And then using the VHS cases to like store weed in is dope. I love the fact that they're stuck in the past, in that they, you know, they go next door to buy wraps, even though they clearly sell raw, you know, pre-made wraps. They could do it in an instant. They don't need to go to the Quick Stop anymore to buy them. They just have them then and there. Those little details I love. It's just like these guys are still just hanging on, and not even a bad way, in like a good way. Like, it doesn't have that same sad hang on, I guess. And yet having Kevin come out and sorry, have him sign Bob and come out and have that one moment of talking. And oddly recontextualizes the movie a little bit too by talking about why an artistic choice to have it in black and white would be. And I was like, oh shit, that's actually
even though it's awesome.
Like it's total bullshit, but it's also that idea that if you recontextualize any movie, you can find meaning in anything. Like I never thought about the idea of like, oh, it's black and white, like it's, you know, like it's some sort of security camera. I'm like, oh fuck, that's actually a really good way to think about it. I doubt he ever thought about that when he was, you know, made it in the 90s, but it's possible. Jay clearly has new teeth and it threw me out a lot. But other than that, like, I think those performances were great. You got to see Jordan, Jay's wife and his daughter earlier in the movie. Yeah, it was.
How would they come in to buy and then?
Movie cereal.
That's right. Mm.
But yeah, no, it was a great performance by both of them.
Yeah, I like how usually Bob's like big speech is obviously such a big emotional center point of a lot of these films. And in this one, it's literally just, I'm the cameraman. If you want me to be your DP, we'll shoot this in black and white. That's so funny. There was a few good James. Also, where they're like, where's the video store? This was the video store. You're in the video store. Like, oh, we got to turn this tape. Like, how'd you watch it if you didn't have a tape player? We held it up to Sun, you idiot. Like,
yeah, I did like that. They're like, we didn't have any such to watch it, but then why did you not rewind it? Because I was like, how the fuck are they going to explain this? This is awesome.
Yeah.
What about you, buddy? Are you in the same spot with Jansen and Bob?
Yeah, I loved it. Kind of how subtle their performances was. Like, you've kind of already stated on. I loved, I can't remember when it was. I can't remember what it was in reference to, but Jay has this awesome line. You're like, that's how we did it in the 90s, son. And yeah. I'm just like, that's the line that got me. I just started
it's
cracking
the,
up after
at
that
the start when they're like sitting outside and people come up and they want to walk into the store to buy a joint or whatever. And they're like, no, over here, man.
Oh, that's right.
And then they do like the full like, achoo! And they like sneeze some money through and everything like that. And it's like, what are you doing? Like, that's how we did it in the 90s, son.
But I also really enjoyed where Jay's trying to learn his lines. Like, you're rude, motherfucker.
Yeah, yes. Rude, motherfucker.
Yeah. It's just so fucking stupid.
That was good shit. That was so funny. That was funny shit. Elias. So, this actor hasn't acted really since Clerks 2, by the way. So I appreciate coming back. Doing.
He did like one or two things afterwards, but even then they were remotely connected to Kevin.
Yeah, produced or whatever. So at the start of the movie, totally still Elias, full Christian, coming in, singing songs and everything like that. But after Randall's heart attack, he becomes a very goth devil worshipper that gets into selling NFT kites with Jesus on them and proceeds to get darker and darker throughout the rest of the film with his friend who doesn't seem to talk, but then suddenly does talk by the end of the movie. Ryan, what'd you make of Elias' character in this movie?
Yes, as I mentioned, it's probably the one thing that I didn't enjoy as much, but mostly because I felt that there was a lot less depth. Granted, he wasn't that deep of a character in Clerks 2, but like there was something about him in that movie that I really, really enjoyed. He, because he's probably connected to that very time-sensitive joke about the NFTs and the crypto, it kind of hampered it a little bit. And because he has done limited work since, probably the most stilted-ish performance out of everyone, it felt disconnected from the rest. And his little Silent Bob, which is, you know, in the real world, is Harley Quinn Smith's partner. Which is a lovely little sort of thing. And he's playing like a Silent Bob equivalent. So it's kind of, I don't know, just, it's beautifully stupid. And they have a little moment at the funeral at the end, which is cool. And Elias's costume changes were amazing. And just in terms of the different levels of goth and that he wanted to go through was that made me chuckle quite a bit. I kind of chuckled at the butt thieves joke like every time.
I can't remember what was the
problem. So we're talking about the two, when Jesus was crucified, there were the two thieves on either side, one a good thief and a bad thief. And the bad thief was like, you know, if you were really the Son of God, you would save us both right now. And the good thief was like, you know, like if you are the real Son of the Lord, you would, you know, when you pass, you would take us to heaven, you know, because you shouldn't save us because we are butt thieves. And everyone goes, what's a butt thief? And I'm like, because I'm a child, that I chuckled every time.
Buddy, what do you make of Elias in this movie?
That's probably the one thing I don't really like. I didn't actually really like the recurring costume changes. Like, they just kept getting more absurd and absurd. And the more it got into, like, making this super sentimental and having those scenes with Dante and Becky, you know, and then kind of the everything in between, that was, like, the one kind of taking me out of it kind of moment. So, I don't know. It's probably the only thing I didn't really like, but
it did kind of have like the continued innocence of Elias in that he's gone from this to being a goth and not really knowing what it is. Like, he's clearly trying to find it and just taking influence. Like, he kind of looked like Frankenfurter for there for a minute. You know, she's like, what should a goth be? I don't know. Let's just do a lot of costume changes until I find it.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, as I said before, I didn't hate it. I just found the whole NFT crypto jokes to be very confused. They were confusing my head. I'm like, am I laughing with you or what's the joke? Is it funny? And yeah, Elias, I'd agree. Yeah. Probably the most stilted performance, I guess. The costume changes didn't worry me too much. It was only sort of annoying really towards like the back, like last couple scenes where it was the most serious, where I was like, all right, now you're sticking out like a sore thumb. But throughout the rest of the movie, it wasn't bothering me so much just having this rant. Because in any other movie, Jay and Silent Bob are usually the most cartoony looking characters popping up throughout the film of relatively normal looking and normal sounding people. So, but yeah, Elias sort of took it to another level with some of those costumes.
Commenting on how Jay and Silent Bob were a much more serious-ish tone, do you think they brought in Elias and whatever the other guy's name was to sort of be that, like to fill that space for what Jay and Silent Bob would have done normally? They're like, well, we want to keep these guys grounded, but we know we need that, like, that bullshit duo stuff. What if we just give it to Elias and the other guy?
I don't know. I feel like they just start. I feel like he probably wrote, come up with Elias's story, like the whole turning against God and crypto thing, and thought that was funny, and then probably just added in the sidekick part as it went. I don't think it was in particular just because I don't think there was a choice made to ground Jay and Silent Bob. It was just, I don't know, they're older. Him and Jay can't be fucked doing as much. You know, like, I feel like
the back end of Reboot grounds them pretty well.
Yeah, true. Maybe that's why, I guess, maybe. Like, it's character consistency. You learn a lot from Holden Ford at the Comic-Con. Jay's calmed down since that moment. I'm a dad now. Bong. And then, of course, the final character, the main character of the film, as Brian's pointed out, Randall. So, really interesting, the best and only character arc he's really ever had in any of these films. Randall is the same character in every single movie. He starts this movie as literally the same character, and I guess that's kind of the point. You like, the movie starts and you see Dante, and you're quickly introduced to the fact that he's got this trauma he's dealing with. Jay and Silent Bob, obviously, as we're talking about, a little bit more calmed down. Randall's still just the same dude. Like, he's still sitting there cracking jokes, talking pop culture references, coming into work every day. Like, I don't feel like he changes at all between this and the first movie, which is the point. But yeah, by the time you reach the end of the movie, you really have this sensation, like that final conversation he has with Elias, where it feels genuine, not just that. Because I remember when he joked about it in the Clerks 2, you know, he makes that joke. When Dante goes, you're going to be my best friend. And that comes from a point of like almost bullying. Like he doesn't actually want to be friends with Elias. He's picking on Elias all the time. He's just saying that as like, he's lonely. He doesn't have any other friends. Randall's only friend is Dante. And that's sort of the thing. They only ever have one another. Whereas I feel like in that final scene, where he's like actually talking to Elias, it feels genuine. Like, it feels like he is actually a changed man at that point, and not fully changed. I'm sure he'll still make jokes about fucking Star Wars and make jokes about Elias and whatever. Like, he is who he is, but I feel like he's definitely the grown up. It only took him 50 years, because I think that's how old they're supposed to be in this, like 50-ish or something like that. And it took him like 50 years to grow past the age of like 18, I guess, of maturity or wise like that and stuff. But yeah, definitely does feel like the last time we'll see Dante and Randall, and it feels like a really great place to end their character projections. So the other thing I find interesting is that Randall sort of always this projection of sorts, like Kevin enjoyed. Wasn't Kevin originally thinking he was going to play Randall or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, Randall is very much based on Brian Johnson, the friend of Kevin who knows from Tell Him Steve Dave. And
plays hockey in this movie?
He's all you, but he plays the whole comic book men play hockey in this music, which is not movie, which is nice. Yeah, so there was originally a bit where Kevin was contemplating playing Randall because he had all the best lines in the movie and stuff like that. And he's kind of what, so he was really Dante, but Randall was who he wanted to be when he was younger.
Yeah. Buddy, how do you feel? Yeah, about, I guess, Randall as a character, the fact, everything I'm saying here, where he didn't have any, like, sort of character projection in any of the movies until this one, and seeing it sort of fold up in this one.
I agree with all that. And that's probably why Clerks 2 didn't hit as much for me, because I'd always seen Randall as, all right, you're the asshole, and you just have no kind of feelings for or consideration for anyone else but yourself. And I can't really remember Clerks 2, only kind of in my mind, so I can't even remember what's happening, but I just know that the resolution in Clerks 2 always felt like someone else explaining to Randall what he should say or how he should feel, and instead of him coming to that realization himself and having genuine kind of remorse or being apologetic. And even though that kind of happens in this as well, with someone else kind of having to point out, like, hey, he's been in your life all this time, and he's also the main character of this. This is your friend. He's put the money up for your movie. He's cared so much. So even though there's still that moment, because he's had the heart attack and everything, he also has that realization, like, man, this could be it. And maybe you have been a shitty friend, or maybe you have overlooked how important you are in your own life. And it feels like a more genuine attempt to, like, listen, man, I don't want you to go. I know I'm saying this or coming to this realization too late, but I guess it comes down to the same line with what you said about Elias and kind of, you're only my best friend now because of default, but and that being genuine as well. I felt like he's actually had his moment and he's kind of stepped to having his own growth and, like, hey, instead of just someone pointing this out and I say the right things, we heal and then I go back to being whatever it was. This felt like it was actual kind of a fork in the road and, all right, I get it now. I get it. I have been a fuckhead, or I have been, you know, not the best of friends. Maybe I should treat better, or maybe I should change parts of my life. Like, I feel like he has that moment now, whereas in Clerks 2, I never really hit. It was like always just kind of resolved so quickly because someone else just said, hey, you're doing the wrong thing or whatever. So yeah, much better this time.
Ryan?
Knowing that Jeff Anderson was always hesitant about reprising the role of Randall, and including Clerks 3, I think one of the reasons reboot happened before Clerks 3 was that Jeff Anderson actually said no and wouldn't come back. So
yeah, the story was that they had him and Kevin had a fight, weren't talking for a period of time. This is around that Kevin had wrote a script for Clerks 3. Apparently they'd looked at it. Jeff said it. He wasn't going to do it, didn't like it at all. And then they had a fight over maybe the script plus other stuff. They weren't talking for ages. They went to some Comic-Con or whatever and were sitting there signing figures or whatever. And they just began talking and then they made up. And then Kevin said, all right, man, I'm going to have a look at that script again. I'll see. I'll come back to you. And he came back with this. So it really makes you wonder what the original...
Well, I know, I remember there being a time on Twitter where Kevin Smith was like, hey, if we were to give Randall a partner, who should it be played by? And, like, the most consistent answer was Caitlin Olsen from Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I'm like, yes, she has, or Kat Dennings, I think, were the two. Just that, right, like a mirror image of Randall's character, like by actresses that can deliver that sort of performance. So maybe that was an option at some point as well. Like, maybe that's a different path. But knowing that, and then knowing this movie came together and got made, and you see the level of commitment to the role that Jeff Anderson gives, you know, he went, this is the one, because he gave everything in this. And I think that's probably the thing that I can applaud the most. And as to some of these conversations, I feel, had mirrored ones Kevin had, whether it be around the selfishness of his actions. Like, maybe, you know, the I feel like there's a little bit of Mosier in Dante, you know, in this as well. It's talking about, hey, you know, because we know Scott Mosier, what, you know, the producer to Kevin's director for all of the Viewers Universe up until Clerks 2. Then they sort of parted ways to sort of go on different creative endeavors. And they still work together doing Smodcasts and stuff. But you can't help but feel there may have been some tension in there previously. And this is Kevin putting that into this movie to sort of acknowledge that from his past and possibly kind of apologize to Mosher in a different way. I that's how I read it anyway. But no, I think Randall was absolutely great in here, especially coming very similar to Brian O'Halloran. Previously, the performance are kind of stilted, mostly because they weren't a full-blown actor at the time, and they've just gotten better and better, even though they had only minimal roles. I felt this performance here was really good. Delivery was great. The emotion was right. As you know, you were alluding to before, there's been no character growth in Randall, and we get it all here, but it all felt right for me, at least. I really, really, really like Jeff Anderson in this, and the growth and the path they took Randall on.
It's for the majority of the movie, he's just doing Randall again, which is fine.
But it's different. There's a little thing, and then when you sort of when that turn kind of happens, and you see that slow turn, like, to me, it's those little, like, I liked a little bit of subtlety in my things. So having him, like, yes, he had the heart attack, but like watching those little subtle changes within him, and then as the movie progresses, he gets more confident in being that director, you know, and rather than just going from one, you know, 2 to 10 or 2 to 8, he's kind of going 1 to 2 to 3 to 4, and then who he is at the end of the movie isn't the same as the start.
You have that really nice scene too, where Randall's directing, and you have that slow zoom in shot on Dante just watching his friend, and you know what he's thinking. Like, he's thinking, oh, my friend's like finally found something. He's like, this is the first time he's probably seen him passionate about anything in his entire life.
Been cynical this entire time, and this is the
his entire life is just like shitting on things. So that was really good. And yeah, by the time you get to the end of this movie, obviously the hospital scene where the performances of both of them, like, laying in bed, and then one laying in bed and one not laying in bed, that very emotional scene, like, big performance between both of them, I think there. Was there any characters, like, they're all the main ones that are in this movie, was there any like random ones? My only random shout out, I'm not sure if you have any, Ryan, but Eggman's back in this movie.
Yeah, so Walt Flanagan returns as Eggman. We get Harley Quinn Smith as the milk lady, which was the role that Grace Smith did, so Kevin's mum in Clerks 1 and Clerks 2. The Chewy's gum guy returns, which is awesome. We get the return of Ernie O'Donnell as the gym guy, which was awesome. You get the whole comic book man up top. In the auditions, we get the likes of Ben Affleck.
We get Ralph
Garman. We get Freddie Prinze Jr. playing himself. We get Sarah Michelle Gellar. We get the gentleman who did that Hollyweed with Kevin, which is that one-off episode of what would have been a series, which I think should have been. It was actually really funny. Mark Bernardin comes in reprising a character from the cartoon, which was dope. Really small detail, even down to when they go into the freezer and Dante's all shit-faced. And Randall goes, and he walks in, he goes, oh, it's Hoth cold in here. That is a direct line from the cartoon, so it kind of canonizes the cartoon a little bit. Mint. Who else has little cameos in there?
I loved from the auditions, they're like, nah, can you do it like Pacino? He's like, oh, yeah,
That's Ralph Garman. So Ralph Garman is the co-host of Hollywood Babylon, and his entire, like, it's a podcast they do about the entertainment industry. Ralph Garman's tricks is impressions, and
the entire show is literally just him reading stuff the audience sent in, and then Kevin Smith just laughing and going, can you do it as Al Pacino? And like, that's the entire podcast. So my favorite of the auditions though was Ethan Suplee. He comes into audition and all he does is read out his line about
his channels,
the Willem lines, where it's like, I can't see the sailboat. He's like, everyone else is like pretending doing lines from like Clerks and stuff. He just comes in and does his lines from a different.
He's like, that came from
also
a
Ben.
Deep
Ben
place.
Affleck was very funny too.
Yeah,
I'm Buster Joe. Hey, my name's Sailor Bob.
And all the Impractical Jokers are there. So BQ, Sol, Murray, and I can't think of his name right now. The guy that comes in and says, hey, I'm 42, recently divorced. I thought I'd give this a go. Fuck it, why not? Gives like,
that's Joe, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, Joe. I can't think of his name. Yeah, Joe. And he goes, oh, it was me today. Yeah, they're going, yeah, fuck yes, right. And then just leaves, you know, just, it's interesting. Seeing as, like, especially as Joe has left the Impractical Jokers. Yeah. So I guess whether they had split at this time, it's a cool little reunion there
as well.
They
had, yeah. Well, they didn't split for any other reason other than I think he said he, like, they were all.
Yeah, Joe had a lot of it, like, personal things go down and had to step away. Yeah. Let me think, was there anything else? We didn't get to tell him Steve Dave, which is probably a bummer. I would have liked to have seen. At least,
I mean, well, to be fair,
they were there, but they should have said it.
Clerks.
No.
Well, you know where you're going to hear it in potential Mallrats.
Yeah.
That's where you'll have to hear.
I did like that they got the guy that they sold weed to in like the first movie to come back and play. You know, when they did the auditions, that was a nice touch from the. I think it's Chancellor Bob Strike Back.
I was trying to think. I never realized. I don't know who the Hollywood guy was, but one of the dudes, I was trying to find his name, Chris Wood. Is this good? I don't know if it's the same guy. Because he's from Supergirl and Masters of the Universe.
Yeah, and they brought in Melissa Benoit?
Benoit.
Benoit, very different person. She coming in, and that was fun too. Clearly, and apparently like half the people in that auditioned are all part of the Kevin Smith Star Wars Rebels cartoon animated show that he's working on right now. Like Sarah Michelle Gellar and Freddie Prinze Jr., they're all doing the Star Wars show together. So that's mad.
I didn't know Kevin Smith was doing any.
Whatever the one that Freddie Prinze Jr. is working on right now, I think Kev's involved in some way.
What do I know?
Yeah. Star Wars.
All I know is like all of them, like Sarah Michelle Gellar was on He-Man, which was the last thing that he like did prior to this. She was like the main character. Because by the way, spoilers if you haven't watched that series, it's called He-Man, but it doesn't have He-Man in it for half of it. So. All the fuckboys got angry because really it stars.
Isn't it just Masters of the Universe?
Yeah, it's He-Man like, and the Masters
of the Universe. He-Man and the Masters of the Universe is what it's called, but then she plays whatever. I can't remember the characters. Anyway, Sarah Michelle Gellar's character is like the main character, the She-Woman or whatever the fuck.
Wasn't She-Ra, was it? No.
She-Ra? No, it's not She-Ra. It's a different character. Oh. That's a show, though.
Oh, cool. I was in the right wheelhouse then.
Yeah, it's a spin-off or whatever.
Yeah, the only person that was probably missing was Matt Damon, but then again, he's Loki in this, so it's not really needed. Yeah, they grabbed as many people as they could. The only other one that they didn't bring in, which is interesting, was... the blonde woman from Clerks 1 who's actually dating Trevor Furman, the guy that plays Elias. Don't know why she was not in it. But other than that, like they pretty much bring everyone back. And the Berserker guy wasn't there. You know, would like to see if he's still making fucked Berserker. But yeah, no, there's a lot of self-references.
There was a lot of self-references. Did anyone have a favorite joke? I know we've only watched it once, but usually ask this every other episode.
Yeah, butt thieves.
Favorite joke or line or anything like that. Mine I've already mentioned before, which is the whole thing about that's how we do it in the 90s, son. That entire bit, just the sneeze, the like, oh, like acting like super sus while this dude's like, it's fucking legal. Just hand me the fucking, you know, hand me the weed, dude. And they just like make it out this big bit. That had me laughing quite a bit. So, and then just, ending with, that's how we did it in the 90s, son. Like,
that I think that was just my favorite line.
And that line's in Reboot as well, by the way.
Is it? I don't remember that at all.
And then I'm a sucker for Salsa Shark. So, yeah.
Butt Thieves made me chuckle because I'm a child. I did also like that we're making a movie. Like, ooh, a porno movie. Like, everyone has the same, everyone has the same, ooh, porno. Like, no one's like, ooh, a porno. Everyone has the same oddly curious and interested response, which I really like.
It made me just think of Zack and Miri make a porno.
Which I watched last week, so which is essentially just Clerks in a coffee shop with porn in it.
Basically, yeah. And Jason Mewes' dick, so.
Yeah, you'd see all of it at some point. So I'm glad we didn't see all of it in this one, but Yeah. I did like the whole throwback of them just being not wanting to step away from that. But I guess it's hard to pull the jokes in this one because there were noticeably less of them. Not a bad thing.
No, definitely. I feel like this is the most Jersey Girl of all the Bielski movies. Not quite. It's not as, like, quite. It's definitely not Jersey Girl. Mm. Oh, sorry. Not Chasing Amy or Jersey Girl would be the closest. Like, it feels the most towards those two of all of these films.
I'd say. But sadly, just like Chasing Amy, there's things about that movie that really lock it into that one time. And Clerks 3 has the same problem.
Yeah. Any final thoughts? And or are you going to be excited for Mallrats 2 since that's still apparently happening now? Buddy?
Of course I'll be excited for Mallrats. It's number one on my Kevin Smith ranked movies and viewer skew universe movies. So absolutely, Mallrats 2. I'm here for it. Does it make me excited for anything else about Kevin Smith? Like, I'm not a massive super Kevin Smith fan as much as you two. So I like his movies and... Yeah, like I said, some of them are my, I wouldn't say favorite of all time, but favorite comedies are up there. And he's definitely like changed that kind of with the self-referential, the pop culture references from back from Mallrats and stuff. So I guess I'm just the same. If something pops up, I'll definitely watch it.
Because this seemingly came out. That's what was the funniest thing. Like, we had no...
This just dropped out of nowhere for us.
Yeah, because, I've been checking the...
lead up.
I've constantly been checking, once every 2 or 3 weeks, I go, oh, I should probably check. And I would go through all, the cinemas. I'd go your Bigs, you'd go your Villages, your Hoyts. Then I'd go your lesser ones. I checked the Asta. I checked Cinema Nova. I checked, all the...
Just get the Flicks app, mate.
Was that?
Yeah, I was about to say, just check Flips.
Just get the Flicks app.
Yeah, no, I actually quite enjoyed the investigation part of it. That was a lot of fun because I'm like, oh yeah, I saw Red State at the Astor, maybe the Astor has it. Oh, I saw Tusk at Cinema Nova, maybe they have it. So I'm like, I kind of like dug through it and nothing, whatever. I tried to, is there a way I can get in contact with Lionsgate Australia? Nah, they don't really have a direct line. I was like, fuck. And then eventually, as I said, it just dropped. And
it's funny, just out of nowhere. Ryan's final thoughts. Hit us with your bloody...
Where's it sit in the list?
Letterboxd ranking there.
I gave it 3.5 out of 5. And then it sits as number 4 in my...
Oh, top 5.
So Mallrats and Chasing Amy would have been... So Mallrats number 1, as we know. Chasing Amy would have been up there...
Number 2.
Yeah.
And then Clerks 1 is...
Yeah, okay, 3. Yeah. And then 4 would be Clerks 3.
Yeah.
Interesting. Right, it's number 5 then, to finish top 5.
Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Good top 5. That's a very good top 5, actually. I'd put Clerks 2 in there, but other than that, yes.
What would you replace?
I'd probably drop Clerks 1 out and put Clerks 2 in there. Put Clerks 2 at the top, followed by...
From memory, Clerks 2 means a lot because you saw it with your friend, right?
Yeah, so I would have Clerks 2, Giant Slide, Bob Strike Back, purely for emotional reasons. And then Chasing Amy, Clerks. Probably, I'd probably put Clerks 3 in there too somewhere. And yeah.
So hard to remember podcasts from 3 episodes ago, especially when they're 3 or 4 years.
Nah, come on. I haven't recorded anything in between of anything at all, of any other subject. Sure. Ryan, any final thoughts then coming into potential Mallrats 2, hopefully filming sometime soon?
My final thoughts is, this is... I wanted this movie to be emotionally impactful, and I got that, but it wasn't the way I expected it to be emotionally impactful, and I really dig it for that reason, especially when we look at some of the movies that Kevin has done recently, and they are kind of standard. Like Reboot had moments of really good, but it was kind of a paint-by-numbers comedy. In that, if you know Kevin Smith's work, you know what to expect, and it's exactly that. This is, as you said, this is the Jersey Girl, the viewers' universe, but not in a bad way, in the emotional intensity of it. And I respect the living shit out of that because I love Chasing Amy. I love, I actually quite enjoy Jersey Girl. When given the opportunity, Kevin Smith can tell incredibly emotional and real stories with all that heart. And here, I felt like he finally, removed the shackles. I presume with Jay and Silent Bob reboot, he felt he couldn't do it because it's Jay and Silent Bob, and especially with Strike Back, it set a tone where Clerks 1 and 2 did have a specific tone in them, knowing that there can be heart in there. So here he went, well, I don't have to meet dick and fart jokes, because dick and fart jokes weren't as much in Clerks 1. And that's what this is an homage to, weirdly enough. And Clerks 2 did, and it probably swung a little bit too far, especially for Buddy's case. But for me, I think the movie's a great balance. But yeah, Clerks 3 hit all the beats that I wanted. It pulled better performances out of the main cast in a way that I don't think any other iteration of this movie would have done. It was really nice to have everyone back together again in the same way that Reboot did that too. It was made for people like me. It was made for people that have been through the entire journey of Kevin, of the Viewersk universe, those that follow him as a social figure, as a person, I guess. So where, even though we have heard most of these stories before, whether it be the heart attack and this, that, and you know, it's not new to us, but that, if anything, that reaffirmed that to me, and it made it more impactful because I knew it all. And the shot for shot, you know, redos of the opening scene, etc., and then straight just pulling from the original movies in this as well. Yeah, it's not a perfect movie, but it's pretty fucking good.
I just want to point out that I love that I can see your Jay and Silent Bob figurines in the background. And before we kind of like throw to you, Dylan, I just want to bring up a point that I spoke to my boss today, Brad, and he watched it the other night as well, and he, you know, obviously cried and laughed and thought it was amazing as well. But it was funny because we were speaking about it today. We were just saying like how it hits and resonates on another level when you also work in retail, yeah. Specifically
working
kind of
fast food. Clerks 2 did that for me too. Yeah.
So yeah, that was quite funny. But yeah, what about you, Dylan? Are you pumped for More Rats 2 because of this? Or
I should clarify, I'll watch More Rats 2 if it comes because I'm a sucker. Do I think it's needed? Probably not. I think this could act in the way that Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back was originally supposed to be the end of the book of the Viewersk universe. This is the Viewersk universe. Because this is the end of it, because the heart of it is done. Clerks, Dante, Randall, that story is finished. You know, everyone thinks Jay and Silent Bob are the center of the Viewersk universe. No, it's Dante.
It's C-3PO and R2-D2.
Yeah, I did quite like that reference too. But no, Dante, yeah, I think, yeah, once again, pun intended, because this whole thing's about heart, it's heart attacks. This is the end. This should be the end of the Viewersk universe.
But Han died in episode 7 and they made 2 more Star Wars movies. So
and they really shouldn't have.
No, they should have because episode 8 was the best one. So More Rats 2 could be the best one.
Is that what we mean? We need to get a Rise of the Skywalker?
Well, no, maybe they have to because, you know, they
the Rise of the Mole Cop.
At the end they say, you know, Dante is the Luke Skywalker of the story and he died in The Last Jedi. Yeah. So maybe this is The Last Jedi. Maybe Reboot was The Force Awakens.
So, well, that means More Rat 2 is going to be terrible. no, I really hope More Rats 2 happens because I really like that cast and I love that movie. That's like one of my, of course, that's my favorite Viewersk movie. That's one of my favorite movies of all time. Very fucking funny movie. And I think I think you could make a straight up, and the thing is, that movie failed horribly. We talk about this movie, all of us now, we talk about More Rats like this fucking comedy gold, man. This movie is the fine wine, you know what I mean? But the thing is, and it's well known, when that movie came out, it was like, everyone was like, this movie sucks. Critics hated it. It bombed. You know, like, it's so funny. Like, we talk about, like, what is this movie? It's perfection, you know? So it's funny looking back on those things. But I do think that Brody's a character that, like, in particular, that would be quite interesting to see with, in like, a 2023, 24, 25, whatever, you know, like, setting and how he's changed and what, like, he that character would be somewhere between 40 to 50 now, I guess, as well. Like, same sort of thing. It would be really interesting to see. So I think there's a lot of characters in the Mole Rats universe that we haven't actually seen in other movies or only seen briefly in other things, the little cameos that I would love to see explore. And I would like Kevin Smith to do just a straight up silly, dumb comedy like Mole Rats again. Because that movie is just fun. Like, I wouldn't mind, especially after this Clerks 3, a lot more serious. Have one for the team.
In a post MCU world, would a movie like More Rats work? Like, it worked for its time because no one did it that way. Because the formula that is More Rats is standard. Like it's that's comedies these days.
It depends. If he would have to, he would have to change it up again, or to if, to elevate it, he would have to think outside the box again, or else yeah, it'll just be like, yeah, it was okay. But if he manages to hit that magic gold again, I guess that's the thing. We don't know. You don't know. I just don't know.
I love how you said elevate it, and I'm like in my mind, I'm like, aha, elevated comedy now.
We elevator comedy.
Escalator comedy.
Escalator comedy. Yeah, that's right. I was a kid on the escalator. Good. Something else I say at work all the time. Don't even have an escalator at work, but just throw it out. yes, so it's been really fun talking all things View Askew again. I think this movie is really interesting. Happy to talk about it. Glad we spent like over an hour again proving that Kevin Smith movies are continually deeper than what most people think they are. My only thing that's really going to let me down about this movie is I think I can say that we all think this movie is really good. Buddy has it in his top five of View Askew movies. Ryan loves it, of course. I thought it was fantastic. Made me laugh a lot. Made me cry. Like, it's hitting all the things. I think this release, like, is just fucked it. Like, I feel like a lot of, like, who the fuck's watching this movie other than hardcore Kevin Smith fans? You know? And maybe that's the point. Maybe it doesn't work.
That's who it was made for. It's not, like, it hasn't had a wide release. Like, he's done it on Lionsgate did a small release in the US, but he's kind of been doing these tours again. So he's very aware that this is made for his people. For him and for his people. And I think by having that digital release, it's that same thing, right? There's a lesser cost here. There's no risk. There's no financial risk. For those that want to see it, we'll seek it out. And that's the way the fans have always done it. And I think that kind of works now.
I think nearly. The only thing I'd say is even us, as or especially me and Ryan, who would say that like we're obviously a bit more closer to the Kevin Smith narrative, the fact that even I saw this, I was looking on iTunes just to be like, what's out this week? Sometimes I just look on iTunes, like, what's randomly dropped? What's, like, a rentable now, whatever? And then I see it. I'm like, what the fuck? And the like, none of us knew.
Well, so I saw it on Twitter. Like, I said, hey, it's coming to digital next week. I was like, oh, shit.
Oh, really?
And then, okay. Yeah, I was at a wrestling show, I think, when it went live. And I was like, oh, I can't watch it until fucking next week now.
Because, yeah, that's the only thing. Like, even if it is targeted at fans, are the fans getting the message? Because I didn't see anything on Twitter. So that would be my only worry about the movie. Doesn't cost much, I guess. Ben Affleck probably costs.
Yeah, then it will have that little cult effect again, which is as it should.
Hopefully. I've seen a lot of people, like we're talking about on Twitter, people are talking about it positively. Other people say, I've seen people say, Clerks 3 is out. Should I check it out? People are saying, yes. So,
but I've also seen people going, it's not as funny as the other ones. I'm like, good.
Yeah, good. That's fuck off. These things. All right. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Radio Movies. We'll be back in 3 years for the fucking next episode film. I don't know. Catch us when you catch us. You can catch us over at different podcasts. Like you can find Buddy Watson over at Radio Watson. That's on all good podcast feeds.
Well, should I launch that podcast since that time?
That's crazy. Yeah.
Crazy. I've done a whole new podcast since then. Radio Watson. Yeah, I'm no longer that other bad one that I used to be a part of. So got my own podcast, Radio Watson. It's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all good podcast services, even the bad ones as well. Talking about movies, music, pop culture. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. A lot of kind of evergreen topics, kind of like going through filmographies and album reviews. So nothing really news related. So even if you are, you know, kind of haven't caught up on episodes or there's some back catalog there, you can jump into whatever you can at any point.
Yeah. I kind of wish you'd get a website or something because it's so hard. You can't just be like, hey, find all Radio Watson on good podcast feeds. Come on, go to radiowatson.com.
At Twitter, there's a link for my like link tree.
All right.
If that helps.
Miles just give me a bit.ly at this site.
Yeah, come on. Get shit. You can find Ryan Betson over on youtube.com/thepopculturist. What's happening, all things pop culturist?
So unlike Buddy, who's launched a new podcast at the time, I have been doing the same one. I still do For the Players, the Pop Culture Position podcast, each and every week on your Monday, 8 a.m. on podcast services, 9 a.m. on YouTube. I can confirm that we are, in fact, the number two position podcast made in this country as Ashley Hobley of Platinum Explosion did defeat my co-host Max in a game of Nightcrawlers. And as a result, we have lost, whether we knew or we had it, but like it was unsure. Now we know Platinum Explosion, undisputed number one PlayStation podcast made in Australia. Until we book it again for no reason, next time we can. I can't wait.
PlayStation must have really been, PlayStation Australia is really feeling sorry for you for Max losing that battle.
Yeah, that, I think that's what it is. They're like, look, you know, we know that you lost, so here's God of War. And I'm like, thank you, I appreciate it. But of course, you can find me on Twitter at HaggardMC, HaggardMC. We can hear me talk about wrestling, PlayStation, my kid, and another random shit that comes out of my brain.
As I said, that's probably the
pretty much it. I think they hit all the main beats.
That's the triangle. That's the you know, like the triangle, like the food pyramid.
Yeah, yeah, it's, yeah. That's it's, the- yeah. It's the three
Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It's like wrestling, PlayStation, and then at the top, James,
no, it's right? Those it's those three things. So, you know, when they have that, like, the three things that a fire needs, and you take one of those things, everything collapses. That's me, PlayStation, wrestling, and my kid. You take one of those three things away, and I just collapse.
I'll collapse. Of course, you can find me right here, explosionnetwork.com. Still kicking around on the same website. Thank God. That'd be awkward if I was like, hey, this podcast. I fucked those other guys off. All things movie, games, TV, movie podcast. Arcade Couch is all about games. What Do You Want to Watch? It's all hosted by Ashley Hobley. You'll see me on there every episode talking about everything else, movies and TV and media and all that sort of stuff. So if you want to hear me talk about other movies, go subscribe to that podcast feed. Make sure you review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, or if you're listening to it on a place where you can leave reviews, do that. I'm not sure what other ones let you do that these days. Spotify, maybe. I don't know. Tweet at Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes. That'll be the best way. Just tweet this podcast at them and tell them to listen to it. That'd be the best way to help out, I feel, this feed. And if you're just randomly listening to this one because it popped up and you haven't listen to the rest of the feed, I think this is pretty evergreen podcast feed. Just go back and listen to us talk about all the other episodes that are all pretty evergreen stories and just our general thoughts that I feel like would hold up, even though it's been nearly 3 years since we recorded them. But yeah, I think it's going to be totally fine. So yep, thank you for joining me, Ryan. Thank you for joining me, buddy. Snoochie Boochies.
So we did it in the 90s, son.